shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands. Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air. It's another Wednesday. How are you doing, Alex?
Good morning. Not too bad. Not too bad. How are you?
I'm good. I forget it's morning for you. Like these days now when Europe is in wintertime and I'm in Asia, it just throws me off because I'm like, what do you mean it's so early?
Yeah, time zone still surprising you all these years later. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher. I don't remember if I told that story on the podcast, but I think I did, how when I was a kid, the first time I saw a flight booking from Europe to the US, and I was just like, what do you mean we take off at 10 and land at 1 p.m., but the flight is in 8 hours or so? How does that work?
Yeah, it does instantly make you feel better about the fact that, well, I've only been really, you know, I've only been away from everything for 3 hours, when in reality you've been away from everything for about 8.
I know. Time zones are such a cheat in that way, because when you fly west, you feel like you're gaining time. But as soon as you have to fly back east, it's like, oh no, what happened with time, you know?
Yeah, yeah, very true, very true. Speaking of flying east, it's funny because Emmy, friend of the podcast, of course, one of my friends all the way back from school, is currently right now airborne flying east on a Starlink Qatar Airways 777, which is really funny because there are only a few of them, only a handful of these aircraft so far that have Starlink. But I'm glad that on the first Qatar flight she's ever flown on, it happens to be the one where she's connected. Maybe we'll try to dial her up later on in the episode. I don't know. But I know that she was very tired and messaging me. She's about to have a nap. And I'm thinking, Emmy, you have Starlink, fastest Wi-Fi in the world. Nap later. Right?
Only AvGeek things that we care about. But speaking of Qatar, I have an exciting update for everyone.
Oh,
guess
God.
What? The Qatar video is not only, you know, in the works, but it is currently being edited as we speak by someone who has gone a long way to sacrifice a lot to be able to make this happen. None other than Oscar is editing the video for everyone.
What?
So it can finally happen.
Hold on. Now I'm terrified. Now I'm on the... Can we go back to the part where actually this video never needed to see the light of day? Because, of course, I have wanted the publication of this video, but...
Now that it's coming,
it's like a slight conflict of interest that your Oscar will be the one to edit me to the world. Dan, no, this is not on. I don't want to have to involve lawyers. This is the last thing that should come between podcast hosts. Let's go back to last week's episode where you were saying that this video is never being published. How about that? Who needs it?
See, you guys, now you know the true agenda behind why the video hasn't been published. And by the way, Oscar's reaction was so funny when I sent him the footage. I made a whole script, narration. It's a real, real video. And when I sent him everything, he literally, we both saw this, but obviously I was there. He's like, wow, Alex went from, in the first few clips, being so uncomfortable on camera to in the end, like dancing around and being so funny. So yeah, it's a nice journey throughout the video.
Oh God, I am worried. Okay, am I able to see the video before the world sees it?
Yeah, I think it's fair, but...
Thank you. But, yeah, because, I mean, look who the editor is like, please. And don't get me wrong, I have full faith. I know he makes amazing videos. And also, I have nothing, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the video. But I know what can be, you know, skewed during the edit process. Well, we have all been there.
we're not doing any skewing, but I will, you know, maybe bring up the edits that you request on the podcast. So just be careful, you know, about telling me not to be honest about how you treated me. It's all very positive. It's all fun.
It's very positive. Funny. It is the video where I surprise you with a nice first class upgrade, and we eat our way from Paris to Doha, working through the menu, chatting, discussing XYZ. I think we had some time at the bar.
We didn't have too much time at the bar. You guys
wanted to.
Something that I'm not including in the video, but that the video made me remember that I had thankfully forgotten, was the other man in first class. Do you remember him? The man who walked around the entire flight, up and down the aisle. You know, he was everywhere all at once and wouldn't sit down for 5 minutes.
That was the guy that was in first class with us, or that was the guy?
Yeah, the guy in first class that we saw at security.
No, so not the one who stopped us at security.
No. The guy in first class who literally in every clip, he's somewhere walking around in the background.
Oh, just like, God, I do remember this. Yes, just for no reason. He kept doing laps. He kept going for one aisle into the back galley, out the other side, around to the bathrooms and repeat. And every time you were trying to raise the camera as like, you know, the front camera to film us.
He'd be there.
He would be there. You're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I cannot work on that video because I've been so busy preparing for my Black Friday sale on PointsMaster. And just one last time, I'll talk about this here, because the thing is, it's impossible to even explain how hard it is to make people make a decision that is good for them. Like, I've tried with my family for so many years to be like, instead of flying economy on this trip, let me help you fly business for like 20% more than you would pay for economy. It's okay. I don't need it. No big deal. Then when they finally try business, it's like, whoa, I should have been doing this all along. And that's what as I'm preparing everything for this Black Friday thing, I'm just like, it's almost impossible to convey that once you've joined, you'll be over the moon. Like, there's no way you'll regret it when you're sitting there on your first business class flight and you've been able to afford to fly business. But before people make that step, it's just like, nah, I'm fine in a middle seat in economy. Like, it's really not that bad. I sleep fine in economy, you know? You know those people?
Yeah, I do.
So now's the time on Friday, guys. Stay tuned.
So the part that I found interesting is you did a Q&A on Instagram over the last few days. And somebody had asked you if they were to, for example, take up your Black Friday offer and become a Points Master through your Points Master Pro course, how soon could they end up flying, for example, in business class and just completely overhaul and change the way they fly? Yeah. And you said, well, you know, it can't be immediate, but it can be, you said 4 days. And I was thinking, well, 4 days is pretty immediate in my book. If you're taking a normal person from the street and saying, this is how you typically fly, I am about to teach you how you can fly in another way. And of course, it involves a little bit of investment, but by nowhere near as much as what people think, because it is such a complex system in knowing how to leverage all these best, whether it's the best deal or the best, you know, value for points or whatever. And the good thing is you are there to remove that complexity and let them be the master of it.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, well, I know that this is something that's very beneficial, and I know it's something that people ask about all the time. And I myself frequently suggest that people should become classmates of the class of 2024, because I consider myself definitely a student in there. And the good thing is that I managed to get the on-air podcast coho discount. So I'm
skip Points Master and just text me. That's the thing.
I do just text you. Dan gets a random text from me about midnight. Of course, he doesn't reply because he's fast asleep. And I'm like, Dan, you know, Heathrow to Paris is 8,000 avios. All right. Or
something like by that. The morning you've booked it. So I don't
by the morning, I didn't even wait for the answer. Yeah. Do I need to open up a Finnair account?
Yeah.
Or, you know, American Airlines, will it let me? Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. Well, there will be plenty of other flights for us to take together. Then it's my turn to arrange something for you, of course. But in the news this week. Unfortunately, it won't be coming until 2026, but there are some exciting things on the horizon, like British Airways having just revealed their brand new first class that will be on the A380 and the 777X. This will be especially relevant for you, of course, going back and forth to London, but I think that would be kind of a funny flight to do. Fun/funny.
I like how already the new first class is a little bit of a joke to you and that you're branding it as something that would be funny rather than just fun. But yeah, this is BA's new first class that is initially going to debut on the 380, which doesn't fly to many, many destinations, is South Africa, Los Angeles, Singapore. The configuration, as you would expect in first, is going to be 1-2-1. Some of the photos, and we'll put them up, of the renderings of what this cabin is going to look like. Initially, I thought, once again, it looks like a decent, well-designed business class rather than first class. And I think that's kind of consistent with British Airways. We would often describe British Airways' existing first class right now as, we would not, but other people say it's, quote, the world's best business class. It's definitely not even the world's best business class. So they're saying that about first. Do you get it? So they're basically saying that it's more like business. But with the new debut, the rendering reveal of their new first class on the 318-777, again, I couldn't help but feel it was just more of the, okay, this looks like a very strong business class product. It doesn't look like a very strong first class product because we know what airlines are doing to push the boundaries in business, let alone in first, where they are raising the benchmark to concepts that look like small apartments rather than what we're seeing with British Airways here. I will note, it's being designed in partnership with Collins Aerospace, who manufacture a lot of aircraft seats. The designers I know have worked with Tangerine, which is a design consultancy firm based in London. And all the kind of little tidbits about the seat, it's going to be the widest and longest British Airways seat ever. Okay, you would expect that. The center seats, the divider is going to come down so that you can share the space, but it's not going to be a double bed that you would get, for example, on Singapore Airlines or Qatar. The TV, it's going to be 32-inch 4K personal TV. Again, nothing revolutionary. We're seeing that already with airlines. Bluetooth audio, that's a nice update for an airline stuck with dinosaur prehistoric IT like British Airways. Interestingly, no big build-up to this. This was just released on the night of their Christmas drinks, which sadly I had to miss because there's a lot going on right now in preparation for the funeral of my lovely grandfather, bless him. And on that note, I'll just thank everyone that has got in touch with lovely messages. It's really, really heartfelt, especially, you know, the listeners. We don't know you guys, but we feel like we do. And so that's really nice. Anyway, so yeah, British Airways, new first, couple of aircraft, A380, 777X, if that ever arrives, and whenever that ever arrives. I think the main part that I liked of this, and I think you'll pick up on this as well, was the storage. I like the rendering of being able to hang a suit in a wardrobe, and it shows a Rimowa bag underneath. That looks cool.
Yeah, it does. I have to say, I find it kind of funny, as you said, there is less hype from British Airways themselves about this product than about their new intra-European economy class.
Yeah.
Remember that earlier this year.
Yes. You're so right.
Yeah, slightly different things to get excited about. But I think this looks like a perfectly nice product, but it does make me think of those business class plus things, the first row of business that you see on airlines now.
Like Allegris.
Or Virgin Atlantic or the 330neo.
Have you flown on the 330neo with Virgin Atlantic?
No, I haven't. I mean,
have you been on the aircraft?
You know my history with Virgin Atlantic.
Yeah, and they don't let you fly that much, do they? No.
Yeah, although I do love them. I haven't been on Virgin's A330 at all.
I have, and I was not impressed at all. I was expecting so much more. I just thought everything looked so cheap. Even those first few rows in that are supposed to be, you know, they call them the love suite or something like that. It's part of the business class, but they are bigger seats and they cost more to allocate there. I just thought the finishing, everything just looked cheap throughout in all cabin classes. And the lounge area, you know, the social space, the bar, goodness me, have they wrecked that. I mean, it's just, it was the equivalent to sitting on a dentist chair. It was just, it's, and even the crew that were on board with me agreed with me that that space has just been absolutely butchered with this design. They said to me, barely anyone sits there when it's on the 330neo because it's just, it's not pleasant at all. The seat is really, really high and you kind of have to sit individually. I think I can't remember if my feet were touching the ground sitting on, it's like really elevated.
Yeah, it's tough to be short, Alex.
I'm not short, Jan. I'm just under 6 foot, but you are incredibly tall. So we've had this conversation before. Anyway, yeah, Virgin, I didn't think did very good job with that design on the 330neo.
BBHB, BBTB, bring back the bar.
But that's general, what Richard Branson said they're going to do because he agreed.
That's right. But I think in general, Virgin Atlantic is one of the best airlines in Europe, even if you say the cabin doesn't look especially...
I think that's a stretch. Luxurious. One of the best airlines in Europe because definitely the bar is so low Virgin in Europe.
Airlines are... No, Virgin Atlantic this year has, even with all my problems, has become one of my, I would say, definitely top three airlines in Europe, but in terms but of Western airlines...
because it's
airlines,
Europe, so Europe, very fine. High. But it's because Europe has a low bar. As I said, is Virgin Atlantic better than Lufthansa? Yeah. Better than Air France. Yeah. Iberia. Yes. You know, ITA. Yes. You know, here we go. We're now getting through most of Europe. SAS. Definitely. You know, British Airways. Yeah. Kind of in many different areas. So, of course, that puts them high. But then Virgin Atlantic on the global stage? No.
Yeah. I mean, but they're mostly competing for transatlantic and UK to South Africa or other parts of Africa where, again, the competition is... worse, a lot worse than Virgin Atlantic. So if I lived in the UK, I would be happy to have them there. But anyway, this is not the debate. It's about, we're not really debating. We're just saying BA's new first class looks interesting. It looks perfectly comfortable, but definitely not something very exciting, especially considering it will still not launch for 2 more years. So
yeah.
I think speaking of airline products, we have something exciting that just happened last night. We had a little A350-900 10 years after the aircraft type debuted fly from a little town in north or south of France.
In the south of France. Dubai. In the south of France.
Okay, anyway, you tell us what happened.
Emirates have finally taken delivery of their Airbus A350 around 10 years after the launch customer. A350s are in service almost everywhere now with so many different carriers. Many of the listeners have experienced the A350, and it is still definitely one of the best ways to fly in any cabin class because of the air quality, because of how quiet it is, the smooth ride, and so on. I did recently 2 overnight flights pretty much back to back, right? And the overnight flight on the 777, goodness me, did I wake up like the air is so dry by the end of the flight. It hurt to gulp. I mean, it was just, you felt this layer, and we've spoken about this time and time again, but I can't quite believe that there has been, you know, there's no solution to it. It's just how the 777 is. Whereas, and I wear a Whoop, you know, the Whoop kind of the wristband that gives you all of the data. And so the Whoop had told me that I had slept a solid 5.5 hours, which is great. Couldn't have done better. So I knew I slept very well and very deep. On the return sector, I flew on an A350, and again, I slept 5 hours, 10 minutes, but I woke up feeling like I'd woken up in my bedroom. I woke up completely normal, and it really goes to show, you know, that difference. Anyway, so the 350 is still completely comfortable.
Yeah, and I also have to say, I notice a difference between newer compared to older A350s, that newer ones compared to 9 or 10 year old ones are even better in that respect.
Well, there are always upgrades, both, you know, physically in terms of the hardware and the software, and then everything in between, you know, the filters on board the aircraft, and there are evolutions between the first delivery and now. Airbus are always doing these kind of developments and upgrades, as are Boeing and all of the manufacturers. So that's not so surprising. So anyway, Emirates have taken finally delivery of the A350. It's now in Dubai. We've had a few photos of some guests and media that were on board. The cabin for the A350, I mean, a lot of people said this was going to be well, including Emirates, they said this is going to be a new business class, you know, kind of describing it at one point as a new era. One point described it as revolutionary, as Sir Tim Clark did. It's their same business class. It's their same premium. It's their same economy. So what we have is more of the same.
Yeah, it's exactly the same, guys, as their new 777-300 business in a 1-2-1 configuration, which is, of course, disappointing for such a new aircraft that they will be flying probably for decades to come.
Yeah.
So although it's not a bad seat, it's certainly not anything to get super excited about, which, yeah, it feels a bit sad to have the first new aircraft type delivered to Emirates since 2008, so 16 years, and also the first new aircraft delivered at all to Emirates in several years since the last A380, still have something that just isn't so exciting on board. It feels a bit sad, but then again, this aircraft at least will be exciting in terms of the routes it's going to unlock. Emirates will be, they just launched Edinburgh, for example.
Well, they resumed Edinburgh, I think.
When did they fly to Edinburgh? Long ago then.
Oh, now I'm wondering I'm incorrect. They resumed Glasgow.
Glasgow has been going, I think, throughout the pandemic. It's an
E380. Which did they resume? I need to check this. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, there's going to be a ton of exciting routes thanks to this aircraft. But in terms of the onboard experience, I guess the good news is something that I enjoy as a
flight. Oh, yeah. Sorry. It is. So it's Emirates Returns to Edinburgh. Yeah.
After how long?
After how long?
Definitely.
Okay, go on. I mean, find out.
Yeah. Let me finish my point and then we'll talk about Edinburgh. But just the thing I like about it is that you at least have that consistency. So although it's consistently a relatively not spectacular product, you don't really care if you end up on an A350 or one of the new 777s or an A380 because the seat is pretty much the same. So the difference will be the air and a more modern cabin overall, but at least you're not, you know, it's not just a bet what you're going to end up on. And luckily, Emirates is quite good about sticking to the routes that they've said and putting the aircraft where it's supposed to be. So when did they last fly to Edinburgh?
Really predictable. They started it in 2018, and of course they stopped it in 2020, and it's the first time since the pandemic that they now return to Edinburgh. So kind of standard stuff there. Let's stick with the UAE for now and hop over from Dubai to Abu Dhabi, where Etihad, the official national carrier of the UAE, has announced what they describe as the much-awaited 10 new routes in their biggest expansion ever. Fair enough. It is significant. It is significant when any airline launches some new routes, but for Etihad to announce 10 in a day, I tried to think about what if I was in charge of this, if I would have wanted to stagger an announcement and kind of, you know, drop a route a week for 10 weeks just to keep the momentum going, where could be next, rather than drop 10 in a day and then the news cycle moves on 24 hours later.
That's a good idea, actually. I think you're right. That would create a lot more hype if you, especially if you tease a little bit every day.
Yeah.
And you know, because these are some, I think, incredibly exciting routes. And we're seeing flights launch to some cities that don't really have a premium airline serving them. They don't really have long-haul flights. So should I read off the list of destinations?
Yeah, so let us know. What are the 10 new routes?
So slightly less exciting, Abu Dhabi, Algiers. We already have Qatar Airways and Emirates flying there. Of course, Turkish and a bunch of airlines other than them. Atlanta to Abu Dhabi with an A350-1000. This is interesting. And does this hint that Etihad is about to become partners with Delta? Because that is needed for Delta because they don't have a close Middle Eastern partner. They have Riyadh Air.
They will have Riyadh Air. And how many flights do Riyadh Air operate currently to Atlanta?
Next question.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Well, of course, we're excited to see Riyadh Air finally fly. But for now, they need a partner that is fully functioning and in, you know, that isn't Saudia, let's be honest. So Etihad would make a lot of sense for them. So we have Atlanta four times weekly. Then we have a destination that I, as a Thailand lover, find incredibly exciting. Four times weekly flights between Abu Dhabi and Chiang Mai, which it's funny because didn't we just bring this up a couple episodes ago?
We did.
About how Qatar Airways flew there during the blockade.
Yes, Chiang Mai, definitely. That's an interesting one. And really complimented as a destination in terms of the quality of the destination and it's not following that pattern of decline that sadly so many other areas of Thailand have followed, which of course you know very well because you're always there.
Yeah. So this is the only real long-haul route that will be operating outside of East or Southeast Asia from Chiang Mai, which I think is just amazing to be able to get in one stop from so many places in Europe to Chiang Mai. Of course, you can kind of do that if you live in a city that Thai flies to, but this gives you another option. Hanoi, also six times weekly, A321LR. Not quite as exciting, but still nice to have another option.
I don't know about Hanoi on a 321LR. That's quite the journey. I mean, I know that the 321LR, as we discussed last week, is literally the point of it as being long range. That's what LR means. But if you do have the option to do that on a wide body, I'd always choose the wide body over a single R for that aircraft.
Of course.
I know that, for example, Etihad's neighbor, Qatar, send the 787-9 to Hanoi. And the crew find that a little bit difficult just because of the configuration of the galley. It's kind of tight. There's a big business class with no second galley. And so they find that a little bit of a long sector to deliver such a full service in both cabins. I can't really imagine how, you know, that's going to be a 9-hour flight on a 321LR with definitely a premium passenger, fare paying passenger on board, economy passengers who are wanting to explore Vietnam and so on. It just may be a bit tight for such a route. But again, this is what airlines are experimenting with.
And I think what's good about this is that it always leaves the door open for increasing capacity. Once you launch a route, you have that. You've done all the paperwork. The facilities are in place. So it's much easier if the route does well to increase. And that's one of the good things about the A321LR, that it gives airlines flexibility to try new things without risking as
without
much.
Worrying so much. And the reason why Dan is explaining it as that they're not risking that much is because these aircraft, the 321LR, it has the efficiencies that is matched with the likes of a short haul aircraft. So it's incredibly cost efficient for the airlines to go there. So it's much easier for them to break even per flight. And therefore, there is less worry about what are we going to do if the route's not a success and we have 150 empty seats. Well, this aircraft has less than 250 seats on board. So it's
less than about 100, probably 180 or so.
Yeah, usually 100, between 180, 193, something like this usually is the config. So it's definitely an easier, more peace of mind options for airlines to be able to assess the viability of a route if they can't rely on everyone else's data.
Exactly. So other than that, we're seeing Etihad return to Hong Kong, which is also exciting just because so many airlines are cutting capacity to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So to see another airline launch, I think, is always good news for people who live there and people who want to travel there. That's on a 787. Then we have Abu Dhabi Krabi, another destination in Thailand. And again, I love to see Etihad do this. In this case, Fly Dubai actually happens to fly to Krabi already from Dubai, but connecting to Fly Dubai is just not very convenient if you live in an Emirates destination. Their terminal is pretty horrible at Dubai International Airport. So having the option of going one stop with Etihad to this total resort place, I think a lot of people will appreciate. That's going to be daily on an A321LR. Then we have A321LR flights to Medan in in Indonesia. Abu Dhabi to Phnom Penh in Cambodia, four times weekly. This I also think is exciting because, yes, Qatar and Emirates both fly there, but they fly via Vietnam and Singapore respectively. So there's no direct flight from the Gulf to Phnom Penh. This will give people a much quicker route and, again, an easy one stop via Abu Dhabi. We also have daily flights, which I love to see on a 787 to Taipei. I love Taipei. I love Taiwan. And this is just a very exciting development, in my opinion. And then Tunis, 3 times weekly, which frankly seems crazy low, also on an A321LR, considering how much traffic there is from the likes of Dubai and Doha to Tunis. But there you go. That's the expansion.
It's interesting. I think Taipei, definitely a very interesting one there. I know Taipei is incredibly lucrative for Emirates just down the road. And also it's very lucrative cargo wise. So I think Taipei for me was the most interesting announcement there.
Yeah.
And of course the considerations with the one China policies that some airlines have to adhere to, you know, China has been known to pick up the phone and insist that airlines are not to fly, for example, to Taipei, and in return be able to gain greater market access across mainland China and so on. So airlines are always caught in incredible difficulty when trying to play that balancing act. So I thought this was the most interesting development of that list.
And it's also very interesting to look at how the two 787 destinations, the two wide body destinations, are Hong Kong and Taipei. Meanwhile, Etihad is cutting down on their Chinese network. So they fly to Beijing and Shanghai only, I think, in China. So it shows a slight reprioritization. Obviously, they're not very interested in launching more flights to mainland China, which might be why they're making this decision. Of course, Emirates flies an A380 high density daily between Dubai and Taipei. So, I mean, that kind of makes me curious. Why does not Qatar Airways join the party now?
You know what? I'm not actually sure. I think I'm correct in saying that it is, again, one of those complicated political decisions that occur as a result of what I had outlined in terms of the negotiations with Beijing and that balancing act of wanting to tap into mainland China, but also potentially serve somewhere like Taipei. But let me try and get a more definitive answer and I'll come back to you on it.
Good, good.
Well, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the fact that there is this, and excuse the pun, mass exodus from X, formerly known as Twitter? Because, slowly but surely, a lot of people that I look forward to their tweets, you know, look forward to their threads, I find them super informative, they're all dropping out. I mean, they're dropping like flies, just leaving X because of what has happened to X as a platform. And don't get me wrong, I use X quite a lot and it has just gone to complete trash over the last few weeks, especially. I barely see anything from anyone that I actually follow, and I just see endless things associated with the Republican agenda and Elon Musk's different ventures and so on. And it's like, okay, if I was interested in all of that, I would have actually, you know, told the algorithm that's what I want to see. Why are you showing me this? I've never expressed interest in such. I want to see aviation, global affairs, politics, news. Not this, you know, it's just gone to, there's, my feed is full of loony bins. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. So the reason I bring this up is because where it was just friends and then colleagues leaving X, now it's airlines, because Austrian, who, let's face it, we never hear from, right? Because they just let their parent do the talking over in Frankfurt. Okay, Austrian posted this sassy advert that shows a cabin crew in their iconic red uniform pointing to the exit doors, and it says, "We took a moment to locate our nearest exit." And it says underneath, "Austrian is closing this account, effective immediately."
Austrian said, "Auf Wiedersehen."
Austrian said, "Auf Wiedersehen" to the X platform. But the funny part is that this just so, I thought of all airlines, I didn't have that on my 2024 bingo card. Like, Austrian gets ballsy and gets sassy and throws shade at removing itself from a platform that, let's face it, a lot of people until now rely on to get in touch with airlines, to find lost baggage, to follow up on customer service complaints and so on. It's interesting. Do we think more airlines are going to follow?
Probably. So as far as I understood it, Austrian didn't leave. They didn't make a political statement about leaving, right? I think there were also some things about Twitter getting a new terms of use thing a few days ago, which made, well, actually, they left on the 31st of October, I see now. So they left before this latest wave of everyone deciding to leave Twitter. But also, we're in an era where airline customer service is getting more widespread in other avenues. You can text a lot of airlines now on iMessage or WhatsApp to get support.
Well, iMessage? I've never texted an airline on iMessage.
I do that with Delta, and they actually have a great iMessage tool. Like, it's way better than anything I've used on WhatsApp.
I use WhatsApp with some airlines.
Yeah, so I think, you know, DMing an airline or tweeting them is very 2018 in my mind. I still do it sometimes.
You're telling me I'm very 2018.
Do it sometimes with some airlines, but I think the point is it's time to catch up and have better avenues of communication that aren't just filled with spam and weird political rhetoric.
There's so much spam on X. It's just horrible. It's crazy. I really miss the old gold days of X. Like 2019, I perceived to be a great year for Twitter. It was just so informative and so well-rounded and in terms of the information that you could obtain. And everything was just a bit more reliable then. We didn't have the threat of deep fakes through AI, and you didn't have to question everything. I mean, I started questioning that video that Kamala Harris put out yesterday thinking it was AI because she looked a little worse for wear, bless her, but apparently that was real.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hate what has happened to that platform because I really, really found it a useful tool over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, we're losing / at risk of losing so many tools we found valuable. We haven't spoken about it on the podcast, but we have high key been freaking out about the problems at Expert Flyer. Yeah. Luckily, it's up and running again, but it's still not working for all airlines. There's tools that
can't. And the seat maps are still whack. They're still showing aircraft that are like 10 abreast, and they're showing it like 2-8, you know, like in a configuration. It's what's happened to Expert Flyer is a little bit scary. I mean, you and I were freaking out about it, as you said, just yesterday. I mean, until today, Dan, with airlines that there's supposed to be no problems with Expert Flyer, like British Airways, I had an issue with it yesterday. I could see that it showed me that there was someone in the allocated seat. But I was on the phone to a friend who works at headquarters at British Airways, who was showing me that their internal system is saying the seat is empty. But ordinarily, I would absolutely trust Expert Flyer and what is presented on the system there. But it got it wrong. And actually, in turn, an hour later, to arrive and see that the seat was empty. So why was it inaccurately being represented on the website?
I think this is a great example of how vulnerable we are to one service being down, because the 10 days or so that it didn't work earlier this month or that late October, that was really like genuinely while I was traveling, I had such a hard time. I was like, wait a minute. I can't check the seat map on my upcoming flight. How do I know which seat to ask to change to? How do I know which seats are available before I book the flight on some airlines that don't let you see it until after? It was really eye-opening how at the hands of those types of services we are. Luckily, because of that, I think there's a few alternatives popping up that will hopefully get better over time. But that was stressful.
It was. Should we move into something less stressful, such as Q&A?
Let's do it.
I have a question here from Carlos. He says, "Hi, Alex. Recently stumbled upon your podcast with Dan, and it has since become a primary source of anything aviation related." Thank you, Carlos. By the way, many people have messaged me saying they've recently come across it. If you guys have recently discovered the podcast and you are getting in touch with Q&A or for any other reason, would you be so kind as to let us know how you stumbled across the podcast so that we can just get a better idea of how these things happen? You know, is your algorithm working in our favor and sending you our way? Are you seeing it via the link through Instagram, through Dan or myself? Are you seeing it via Dan's YouTube videos? Are you Googling aviation-related podcasts? Let us know, because it's really interesting for us to understand. Anyway, back to Carlos's question. He says, "I have a question for you guys. I noticed that Cathay Pacific flies over Russian airspace from North America to Hong Kong. However, flights from Europe to Hong Kong still seem to avoid the Russian airspace. If they are already flying over Russian airspace for their North America routes, Why do they not do the same for their European routes?
Well, ask Cathay Pacific.
He's asking us. So, well, from what I can gather, Carlos, Dan has no idea, but from what I can gather, it is, again, that balancing act whereby Cathay is most likely respecting the political situation, i.e. the sanctions that Europe have on Russia, along with the along with North America, but a lot of them are Europe-led sanctions for Russia, and being able to reach Europe by avoiding Russia and keep Europe a little sweeter politically is an easier job for Cathay to do than it is to try to avoid Russia by going to the US the long way around, right? So it's easier for them to get to Europe by avoiding Russia, but it's much more difficult and far more expensive if they were to try to uphold the same political respect, if you like, by avoiding Russia and going the long way around to the US. I would say that's where that decision is. So it's just down to them kind of playing that balancing act that we spoke about earlier in the episode.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to the fact that the flight times to Europe are almost the same. It hasn't been impacted that much. But
yeah,
when it comes to Hong Kong to the US, they physically could not fly from Hong Kong to the east coast of the US, which is why we still don't have United's direct flight from New York to Hong Kong, which they had before the pandemic. And I guess it never resumed because of the war. But there's a lot of routes there from US airlines that have not come back because they can't use Russian airspace, while Cathay basically is only able to fly there because they use it on those routes. So it's kind of also what's convenient from a cost perspective, right?
Definitely. Let's move across to Shanghai, where Joe has got in touch. Hi, Alex. I'm Joe, and I live in Shanghai. I have a question for the podcast. I'll read out one of them because he sent two. He's asking if we think the 777X will be delayed, or you know, will it be delivered by 2026, or do we think it's going to slip? And he adds by saying, thanks a lot, by the way, the best podcast ever. Thanks for the great podcast every week. I hope you can make it twice a week. We love listening to it. Also, can you ask Dan when he's going to post the Qatar Airways First Class video with you? I've been waiting for that. I hope it's good. Well, we had that answered at the beginning of the episode. Look what happened when I stopped asking. He came to us like a little puppy wagging his tail, trying to tell us, look, I've got a QR First Class video for you. What do we think? Do we think the 777X is going to be delivered on time by 2026? My answer, no. You?
My answer is we can only wait and see, because 2026 is a full year. It could be January or December and it's still 2026, but it could.
No, but remember that it's supposedly it's by 2026. Now we know through insiders that it has already formally slipped to 2026.
That's what I was
saying. The idea, if you ask a Boeing rep now, they're telling you that it's by 26. But of course, yeah.
Definitely not before 2026, in my opinion. Yeah. Probably well into it, or who knows? Hopefully it comes out at all. I have a question here from Clem. He says, hi Dan, saw this comment. It's a she. Sorry, Clem. Clem says, hi Dan, saw this and made me think of your comments with Alex on the podcast. So she's sharing this funny, I guess, meme on Instagram. I sound like I'm 6 years old. If airlines were smart, they'd sit a dog every few rows and charge extra to sit near the dog.
Agreed.
Do you want an upgrade? Ew, no thanks. No thanks. Do you want a pup grade? Yes. Yes, I do.
I absolutely want a pup grade on every flight. My mum was just recently telling someone this conversation came up and I happened to be there. And my mum was like, I would pay more to sit next to a dog. My mum was like, I couldn't think of any better flight, she said, than to be sat next to a Doberman.
Yeah, it's so... We need more dogs on flights rather than less. But
I like that term, pup grade.
Yeah, I know. But that's obviously cool. Some airline or some people would really struggle with it. People are allergic, but...
I've got a question here from a listener who prefers to stay anonymous, which of course is... You're very welcome to write in anonymously, of course. They say, hey, Alex, as always, love the podcast. I know you've been discussing this for quite some time, but I had a rather interesting experience. I flew from Europe to Asia via Istanbul with Turkish Airlines. On the second sector, so the second flight, we were told to shut all the window blinds. I didn't. A flight attendant came over telling me, but not asking me, but telling me to close the blind. I replied, I paid extra for this window seat and I want to look outside the window. And then things got weird. She said, it says, and I swear, it's the law. You must close it or I will press charges. In order to calm the situation, I closed the blind.
Wait, do we know the route or no?
No, we just know that there it was Europe to Asia via Istanbul.
Okay.
Keeping a little bit shady. So the question actually is what power do the flight attendants actually have here? Could she have gotten me into serious trouble, like pressing charges or banning me from Turkish Airlines? Best regards.
Well, first of all, I doubt they would have pressed charges, but the only thing I can think of, since we don't know the route, and obviously this could be incorrect, but there are some parts of China that you're not allowed to fly over if you have a view outside. So they do force you to close it, but that is very rare. And most long-haul flights will purposefully take other routes so they don't fly over restricted areas. But even so, I think...
Have you ever been on a flight on those flights where they've forced you?
I've flown
because
over China
a lot. It is rare, isn't it? I haven't really heard many people. I've seen it a bit online that there are those flights over some parts of China that China worry that, you know, the aircraft is flying over something, you know, secret military information or whatever. So they force everyone to close their blinds. But of course, I mean, how can this be enforced entirely? Of course it can't. You know, someone having a little peek at the drones below, who's going to know?
So what they do, I mean, I know that there's even some airports in China where you have to close the window shade for takeoff and landing.
Yes, that I have heard.
Yeah, and there it's kind of cool because they shut all the window shades, turn off every single light besides the emergency exit, you know, lights, of course. And then you can tell if someone opens their window because light will flood the cabin. So it's obvious if someone is looking out or if it's night even, I think.
But what if just everyone agrees? 1, 2, 3. They let all this light into the gate. God, it's like Bird Box, that movie on Netflix, remember? I don't like that. Idea. Also, it's not great. You know, there is a reason why your window blinds should be open during takeoff and landing so that your eyes adjust to the natural light outside so that, God forbid, in the event of an emergency, your eyes don't take those few seconds to adjust and that if you were to have to evacuate, you would be well acclimatized, if you like. I don't know what the vision equivalent of acclimatization is.
Tell that to the United States of America who do
I
not
know I know it's, I always find that bizarre. We're in America, we're just going to take off in the dark, you know, and have the window shades down because we like AC and ice.
I know, and we hate nature. I don't want to look outside. But this whole situation, it makes me kind of angry to hear the crew would say that, and I would definitely write a complaint to the airline afterwards just to find out what was going on there, because
definitely for them to be throwing around that they'll press charges. I mean,
I would actually immediately ask to talk to the purser on board as well to clarify.
100%. It's very sound advice. The other part with that scenario is there a world where they could say that you were disobeying the orders of the cabin crew of which you are contractually obliged to adhere to and follow? Potentially, yes. So I think you did the right thing by just closing it, because it's a strange phrase. But I'm like Dan, I wouldn't have left it there. I would have demanded to speak with the purser, and then I would have been in touch with the airline after arrival. Regardless to when you took this flight, it's not too late. Reach out to Turkish Airlines, explain the situation to them, and see what they come back with. And if you're happy to share it with us, we are all ears.
Yeah. By the way, just one last topic related to this. I feel like the rise of videos in my social media feed showing fights between people who are reclining and the person behind flipping out has astronomically increased. Like, I see new videos almost every day of some person behind, you know, the person in front who reclined, pushing the seat, shoving it back upright, starting to yell, these common altercations. And I just find that absolutely crazy that people in an enclosed environment like that get just go berserk.
for something like that. Sometimes I don't know. Is it happening more, or are we documenting it more?
Yeah.
Or is it just you know, society? Is this the decline of society? Is everyone just up for a confrontational, you know, fight on a plane? It's terrible.
It's no joke. And that my honest thought when I see that is just, thank goodness we don't, you and I and Oscar, we don't find ourselves in those situations so often, since we're lucky through Points Master or through whatever to be able to, this turned into a marketing opportunity, but
oh my god, honestly, you think it had enough of the plugs at the beginning of the episode, and here we are rounding off the episode again with an advert. I get it, Black Friday deal.
Yeah, but just the fact that when you're in business, how lucky are we that we don't have to work? We recline without thinking about it. And yeah, you know, I spoke about my economy flight on Virgin when I was downgraded, and I was debating, should I recline, should I not? And this is something I never used to think about when I was younger and flew economy all the time on long haul flights. But now it's become such a loaded topic. And the fact that you should have anxiety about getting more comfortable when you have a right to recline your seat, I just find so crazy. So it's
book
just
a,
another...
Book a pup grade instead. Book a pup grade.
Yeah.
And it'd be a far more pleasant experience.
You know, it's funny how in a way that turns into a marketing opportunity to convince people to fly a premium cabin, because you see that and you're just like, oh boy, this is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Well, look, we'll leave it there. It's been a pleasure as always. And we look forward to hearing from you guys by DM if you have any questions, thoughts, comments, or if you want to leave a comment via YouTube, because this episode goes out there. But the majority of you, in fact, the overwhelming majority of you, are listening via Spotify, wherever you do get the episode. We want to say thank you as always for being a part of the weekly grind. And Dan, I wish you a pleasant rest of your week.
You too. And lots of hugs and support to the family ahead of Thursday.
Thank you.
Wait, is it
thank
tomorrow?
You very much. It is tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It is.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Lots of love to everyone and lots of love to our listeners. We will see you next week on air. Bye bye.
See you later.